Come here. Get off.
So welcome to this week's very special episode of The Turn On.
Ooh.
With your hosts, Erica and Kenria. Okay, y'all, welcome back.
I like that.
Oh my God. Remember, so at our kids' school's parent back to school night, the video rolls and the first song that they had was Welcome Back.
It was. Now I was thinking about your ass.
I was like, yes. They listened to The Turn On, all those parents in this hippy dippy school. Okay, so welcome back. This week we're going to do something a little different. Mm-hmm. We are going to read from the Song of Solomon in the Bible.
Oh snap.
Oh snap. So I will, you know, preface by saying this is the most you're going to hear me say dick and pussy
when talking about Jesus
the episode, just because I, you know, still feel like a little church girl in my white socks and stockings and my head slicked back with smelling blue magic grease when I read Burka directly from the Bible. But we'll get into that also.
Mm-hmm.
So we're reading excerpts from the Song of Solomon, which is in the Bible. We are reading from the Contemporary English Version. I will touch on why we'll go into a little bit more details later. But nonetheless, here you go. Sit back, relax, get your wine, get your weed, get your...
Really?
weed is an herb. It's a flower.
Okay.
So get your wine, get your weed, get your water-based... I'm trying to find something that starts with a W that's a little churchy.
I don't know what that may be.
Wafers.
What?
Get your wine, get your weed, get your wafers. Communion. That kind of, communion wafers. Anyway, so sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Hey. Song of Solomon, the Bible, Contemporary English Version. She speaks. Kiss me tenderly. Your love is better than wine and you smell so sweet. All the young women adore you. The very mention of your name is like spreading perfume. Hurry, my king. Let's hurry. Take me to your home. The young women speak. We are happy for you and we praise your love even more than wine. She speaks. Young women of Jerusalem, it is only right that you should adore him. My skin is dark and beautiful, like a tent in a desert or like Solomon's curtains. Don't stare at me just because the sun has darkened my skin. My brothers were angry with me and they made me work in the vineyard and so I neglected my complexion. Don't let the other shepherds think badly of me. She speaks. I am merely a rose from the land of Sharon, a lily from the valley. He speaks. My darling, when compared with other young women, you are a lily among thorns. She speaks. If you were my brother, I could kiss you whenever we happen to meet, and no one would say I did wrong. I could take you to the home of my mother, who taught me all I know. I would give you delicious wine and fruit juice as well. Put your left hand under my head and embrace me with your right arm. Young woman of Jerusalem, promise me by the power of deer and gazelles never to awaken love before it is ready. Their friends speak. Who is this young woman coming in from the desert and leaning on the shoulder of the one she loves? She speaks. I stirred up your passions under the apple tree where you were born. Always keep me in your heart and wear this bracelet to remember me by. The passion of love bursting into flame is more powerful than death, stronger than the grave. Love cannot be drowned by oceans or floods. It cannot be bought no matter what is offered. Their friends speak. We have a little sister whose breasts are not yet formed. If someone asks to marry her, what should we do? She isn't a wall that we can defend behind a silver shield. Neither is she a room that we can protect behind a wooden door. She speaks. I am a wall around a city. My breasts are towers, and just looking at me brings him great pleasure. Solomon has a vineyard at Baal Hamon, which he rents to others for 1,000 pieces of silver each. But my vineyard is mine alone. Solomon can keep his silver, and the others can keep their share of the profits. He speaks. You are in the garden with friends all around. Let me hear your voice. She speaks. Hurry to me, my darling. Run faster than a deer to mountains of spices. She speaks. Let the north wind blow, and the south wind too. Let them spread the aroma of my garden so the one I love may enter and taste its delicious fruits. She speaks. I was asleep, but dreaming. The one I love was at the door, knocking and saying, my darling, my very own, my flawless dove, open the door for me. My head is drenched with evening dew. But I had already undressed and bathed my feet. Should I dress again and get my feet dirty? Then my darling's hand reached to open the latch, and my heart stood still. When I rose to open the door, my hands and my fingers dripped with perfume. My heart stood still while he spoke to me, but when I opened the door, my darling had disappeared. I searched and shouted, but I could not find him. There was no answer. Then I was found by the guards patrolling the town and guarding the wall. They beat me up and stripped off my robe. Young woman of Jerusalem, if you find the one I love, please say to him, she is weak with desire. She speaks. He is handsome and healthy, the most outstanding among 10,000. His head is purest gold. His hair is wavy, black as a raven. His eyes are a pair of doves bathing in a stream flowing with milk. His face is a garden of sweet-smelling spices. His lips are lilies dripping with perfume. His arms are branches of gold covered with jewels. His body is ivory, decorated with sapphires. His legs are columns of marble on feet of gold. He stands there majestic like Mount Lebanon and his choice cedar trees. His kisses are sweet. I desire him so much. Young woman of Jerusalem, he is my lover and friend. She speaks. My darling has gone down to his garden of spices where he will feed his sheep and gather lilies. I am his, and he is mine, and he feeds his sheep among the lilies. He speaks. You are a princess, and your feet are graceful in their sandals. Your thighs are works of art, each one a jewel. Your navel is a wine glass filled to overflowing. Your body is full and slender like a bundle of wheat bound together by lilies. Your breasts are like twins of a deer. Your neck is like ivory, and your eyes sparkle like the pools of Heshbon by the gate of Beth Ribbon. Your nose is beautiful like Mount Lebanon above the city of Damascus. Your head is held high like Mount Carmel. Your hair is so lovely it holds a king prisoner. You are beautiful, so very desirable. You are tall and slender like a palm tree, and your breasts are full. I will climb that tree and cling to its branches. I will discover that your breasts are clusters of grapes and that your breath is the aroma of apples. Kissing you is more delicious than drinking the finest wine. How wonderful and tasty. She speaks. My darling, I am yours, and you desire me. Let's stroll through the fields and sleep in the villages. At dawn, let's slip out and see if grapevines and fruit trees are covered with blossoms. When we are there, I will give you my love. Perfume from the magic flower fills the air, my darling. Right at our doorstep, I have stored up for you all kinds of tasty fruits.
Okay, so welcome back. I hope that we can get some good conversation around this. First, let's start off with why I picked this particular version of the Song of Solomon. I picked the contemporary English version because, as we all know, the Bible was written by
men.
A bunch of men over
a long period of time.
A long period of time. And I think that the more contemporary versions try to do a better, try to be better at kind of washing out some of the anti-womanness, anti-blackness that was written in it. When I first picked Song of Solomon and I was reading various versions of it, the line that says, my skin is dark and beautiful.
Yeah.
In a lot of the other versions, it would say, my skin is dark, yet lovely. Or, my skin is dark, but I'm pretty. That
always
kind of
a
thing.
But there.
Exactly.
Ooh, and pretty, like, for a dark-skinned girl.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm like, I don't know if that really was it.
Right.
So I found this contemporary English version and kind of listened to a few scholars. Oh, and let me give the disclaimer. By no means.
We are not biblical scholars.
We are not biblical scholars. We are not trying to be biblical scholars. We are just two black girls.
Who believe in God.
Who believe in the Lord.
But also believe in pleasure.
Pleasure. Exactly.
And those things don't have to be mutually exclusive.
Exactly. And the purpose of this episode is to kind of walk through our decisions and thoughts about that. But I'm not trying to be a biblical scholar. Not trying to be a biblical scholar. Not trying to act like I'm one. So if you have your, you know, well, look, this happened. All right, girl. That's cool. Yeah, that's fine. But we're going with how we, what we're reading and how we're feeling. So back to what I was saying.
Yes.
I feel like the dark yet beautiful or dark yet lovely was just, you know, a setup from the beginning of teaching people that dark skin isn't beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was really adamant on finding a version of this reading that didn't contain the thou, those, these,
yes, and buts. Oh, but yeah.
I also wanted something that reflected what I feel was the intent of this, which is saying that my skin is dark and beautiful, and it's not a but or a disclaimer, but just the fact that
this is who I am.
This is who I am, and I still feel like I'm beautiful for that. Mm-hmm. For that. So that's why we went with this particular version.
That's dope.
So, I said this, they were setting up standards of white beauty. And I think it's also interesting, and I'll kind of call out some points in these passages. But I also think it was interesting how they used the old timey just metaphors for beauty.
Mm.
So they were like, you know, your cheeks are like pomegranates. I can't remember if we read that part. Or your bosom is like two deers. Like, let a nigga tell me I got bosom like two deers. I'm be like, the fuck? But
thank you.
But I mean, you know, it worked out.
Yes.
It worked out for old timey biblical days. Right?
It did.
Okay.
Can we talk about the whole the dark skin things? I kind of think that that's an important thing for us to pull up.
Okay, I was gonna,
We're gonna do that later.
No, we can do it now. Uh-huh.
Well, because I mean, what this made me think of is something that happened to me my first week of school in undergrad, and it's happened in various forms, but this was like the most blatant version of it. I was in the cafeteria, just minding my business, getting my lunch, and some dude walked up to me and tried to talk to me. I mean, I'm a freshman. He's, I don't know, maybe a junior. Mm-hmm. And I was like, no, thank you. And he was like, what you mean? And I was like, no, thank you. And he was like, I mean, you should be glad I'm trying to talk to you because most. Oh, no, I didn't finish. Because most dudes don't even like dark skinned girls. And I was like, I've never had that problem. And I walked away and went on about my business. I can't remember his face. I don't know his name. But the fact that he had the fucking audacity, because that's what niggas always got, loud. If they ain't got nothing else, is audacity, to say that to me.
But the nerve.
That has stuck with me.
Mm.
And it's not, you know, it comes back to that pretty for a dark skinned girl, which is, a, you know, something that a lot of our friends have, like, that we've talked about many times, about the way that you get treated as if it's a surprise that you're beautiful because you are dark.
Mm-hmm.
And so in reading that, that was what that brought up for me.
And it just, it all goes back to white supremacy, like just being, you know, indoctrinated with the idea that the further you are from the
from whiteness, from the idea of white straight maleness,
the closer, the farther you are from what's right
and from grace.
Yeah.
And God and in those translations, right?
And people will be so quick to classify themselves on a ladder just to make themselves feel superior.
Well, I mean, that's, you know, as I do all these, you know, talks about white supremacy, I mean, that, like, that's ultimately what we're always talking about. You know, folks will step on everybody else to get to the top of the ladder. Like the Hoteps that we talked about,
you know, like they are,
they aspire to whiteness. They want to be able to occupy the white, cisgender, heterosexual, Christian, wealthy, able-bodied man's spot at the top of the hierarchy.
So I was scrolling through Twitter today, and I'm, this is like a half-assed, like half-informed, I will say it now, but the bit I know, I'm like, this is already some fuck shit. So there's a picture of T.I. and Alex Jones, like, dapping it up, and they're like, yeah, we about to get it in and have some conversation. And it's just like, and so my first thought was, this is pure fuck shit. But also, it was a thought that, like, see, this is like, this is a picture of Hotepness. Because although Hotepness is cloaked in the I love black people, I love all black
things, it's cloaked in pro-blackness.
It is the root of it is
an aspiration to whiteness.
So, so white supremacy. And so it's like, although T.I. is black and Alex Jones is white, they still share the same views on
women,
you know, women. And it's just, and so I looked at that like, oh, here goes T.I. stepping on the necks of everybody else for the sake of being white aligned or closer to the top of that hierarchy.
I call that white aspiring.
And ain't nothing, I mean, ain't nothing worse than a, I think I respect an Uncle Ruckus more than I would a Hotep.
I mean, at least that nigga honest.
Yeah.
He say what it is. Instead of cloaking it in, I love my people.
I love black women. Yeah, bitch.
Which ones?
Don't get a job. You know, like, So, or get a job and support us so I can be my black man in this. So, yeah. One of the things that was, that stood out to me also in this was how when she, when the woman was speaking, she said, my brothers were angry with me, they made me work in the vineyard, so I neglected my complexion. And bigger than neglecting your complexion, I feel like this is something that happens. Women tend to, well, not women, but people tend to throw themselves into service for other people and neglect themselves in the, you know, neglect themselves in the end, and then usually it takes something else happening for them to realize, oh shit, I've been slaving away for this.
Codependency.
Ding, ding, ding. But yeah, you know, I've been slaving away and doing all of this for other people, and I've completely neglected myself. And I think that's something that we all do experience. And unfortunately, I think what's difficult about it is because as mothers and caretakers, we, it's a fine line because, yeah, you got to take care of your kids.
Yeah, they like to eat all the time.
Girl.
Three times a day at least.
They're the worst. Like,
they be counting meals.
Didn't you just eat? Why are you growing so much? You know, so you have to, you know, like, so your job, not your, I don't want to say job, but what you do is take care of your kid, especially with us as single parents. I mean, we have, I have a partner that supports and you do too. But but, you know, we're the primary caretakers, but there's a fine line of, like, you know, taking care of everyone else and taking care of yourself. And I used to say, oh, I'm going to be selfish and do X, Y, and Z, but it's not,
it's
even
not
selfish. It's just, this is,
you
want
to take a bath. You
want
to do more than take a 2 minute shower and sit in your tub for 30, 40 minutes. That's not being selfish. That's cleaning your ass.
Exactly. I actually, just a couple minutes ago, I was telling Kenria, that, you know, I've been going through lots of transition mm-hmm. in my personal life. And today I was like, I'm going to have to leave this kid at home. I just got to get away. I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe mm-hmm. I'll walk and go get some coffee. Maybe I'll do whatever. But
what's a gelato place up there?
Oh, okay.
It's good too.
Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah. Anyway.
But yeah, so it's one of those things where it's like, you know what? In order for this situation to continue to go as smoothly as it is, mm-hmm. I need a break. That's right. Need to get away. I need to take care of myself. And I also think about relationships, be it romantic or whatever, where giving me stuff to do was a form of manipulation.
Does that make sense?
Like, so, you know, I am a caretaker. This is a codependency in me, mm-hmm. but I take care of
people. Okay.
Well, I don't want to say the codependent. I know what you're, yeah. why you responded like that. But yeah, like, one of my codependent traits is that I have OCD. I take care mm-hmm. of people. I organize. I yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like there have been points in relationships where I got a little too independent or a little too on my own. And so then my partner finds things
for you
that
to
they
do.
Need mm-hmm. for me to do in order to keep me under their thumb.
Been there, girl. I was making doctor's appointments and I'm like, I'm a goddamn secretary.
Yeah, and nothing's wrong with being a secretary. It's just like,
for
I'm
him,
your
though.
Partner.
Exactly.
You know?
That's
so,
my thing.
Yeah, and so then you look up and you're like, damn, I didn't poured all myself into this person and nothing into me.
Mm-hmm.
And
he over here full as hell.
Full as hell. Or not even partaking in what I did. Because, mm-hmm. I've had guys that was like, I need X, Y, and Z. And so I, you know, look codependent Erica, rush off, do it. And mm-hmm. they're like, oh, well, not yet. You know, and it's just like, well, damn, I didn't put all this energy into this. Mm-hmm. And just for you to be like, nah, yeah. I don't need it. So it's wild to see that shit go back to the Bible days,
right.
since the beginning of time. Also, she, and you read this so beautifully, and
oh,
she
thanks.
Said that, I am merely a rose from the land of Sharon, a lily in the valley. And he was like, hold
on, boo.
You a rose among thorns. And I think this goes to what we talked about with the I'm not like other girls.
Mm.
Or, you know, like, oh, I'm just, this whole thing, I'm just so plain.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
The and false modesty of it all.
Exactly. False modesty. Yeah. That's what I'm going for. And he was like, nah, boo. Don't be dimming your light. You a fly little sister. Fly little sweet thing. So I thought that was really cool. To me, this whole passage that we read was so mm-hmm. amazing to see how the stuff that we do today and the ways that we think has been going on since mm-hmm. the beginning of time. Mm-hmm. So
like their whole thing, like every time it's he speaks and she speaks, when they're talking about each other, it's like the old black man, I mean, I'm trying to get like you, like the whole thing was like them one upping each other, talking about how great they were, and that really like hit me. I'm like, oh, y'all love each other.
So this is like the biblical version of that that song, you will never be nothing in my boo.
I'm like, what are you saying?
Usher. Still all right. My boo. But like, in my mind, this is like two people on the other side of the door.
Yes.
Like, singing. Like, doing biblical prose. But yeah, so it's just really dope to see how this has carried over
time, all the way to Usher songs.
All the way to Usher songs. When picking this, I definitely try to stick to more. So the way that the entire chapter is written out, there's like a few players. So there's the woman, mm-hmm. who's she speaks, the guy, he speaks. And there's like choruses, and right. there's the
women,
the group of women, and then there's the group of dudes.
Yeah, they're like friends.
Her brothers, I think.
Oh, do we? I don't think we read anything from
read
the brothers.
Anything,
yeah,
really,
and then there's their friends, which pulls like yeah. from both sides, I think.
But I really try to stick to really just the woman speaking.
Mm-hmm.
There's a little bit of the guy speaking, and the
we had to get a little bit of what he thinks.
Exactly.
Know,
I mean,
let him bigger up a little bit.
But I definitely try to really focus on the woman's perspective of this, just because that's what we're here for, women writers. So I just wanted to throw that in. One thing I also thought was really interesting. I keep saying one thing because there's a lot of one thing. But there's a lot of I'm yours, you're mine, the possessiveness of it all. And I found that really interesting because, you know, when you think Bible and you think men-women relationships in the Bible, you think man owning a woman. Well, not owning a woman, but, you know, the woman. Yeah, the woman being the property of the man. Yeah. And that's it.
Literally traded for goods. Cows. Yeah.
Here's a wife and a cow in exchange for that. But I thought about the possession, like the whole idea of possession. You're mine, I'm yours. And it was, it seemed like it was a little more mutual than.
Yeah, it was never just I'm yours. She always followed it up with, and you're mine. Like, and I guess it doesn't bother me because it's mutual.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, giving him all the ownership and the agency. And I mean, I think really that's what this really speaks to, is the agency of this Black woman is what speaks to me most in this whole thing, is that she's not just sitting here pining away for this man. She go out in the streets and it's like looking for this joker.
Yes.
It's like telling her homegirls, if you see him, tell him I'm weak. Girl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. Like, well, that until she got beat up by the guards.
Well, yeah, there.
But, I mean, you know, again, niggas gonna nig, and that was niggas nigging. Actually, that was the next part that I was... So,
okay, about the agency.
I'm a little confused about this.
Okay.
This, because, so, I read in certain places, and these were very, like, churchy websites, not really scholar. I mean, there were... They were churchy scholarly websites. I'm probably using the wrong term.
Okay.
As opposed to just a pure scholarly website. Like it had a religious bend to it. That this book was written by a woman and Solomon, and they were going to marry and that kind of thing.
However,
reading this, I don't get
that.
It
doesn't feel that way.
It feels like it's just two people in love. Looking, because if you about to marry a man, why are you running around at night?
Right, when she never mentions at any point anything about them being married.
So there's a part that I cut out in the Erica
contemporary abridged
the Erica abridged version, Erica Bible study version. But there's Solomon, like, hey, you're beautiful, I'm gonna pick you, you're coming to my, you're gonna marry me. I mean, I,
but Solomon is not the man in the story.
I don't think he's the man in no. the story.
And so, she says my skin is dark like something, or Solomon's tense. From what I read, it's attributed, the writing is perhaps attributed to Solomon as the writer, but that he's not necessarily a player in the story.
Okay, see, this is us trying to work
figure
it out.
We don't know.
Because the part where she's like, I'm in bed and I'm looking for my man, so I get up and throw on clothes and run through the city looking for him, like, oh, whew.
Honey. You going looking for a man now?
I mean, like, I thought about that, like, you know, laying in bed scrolling nigga Twitter feed, like, what he doing tonight, you know? Which, ugh, yes, I have in the past.
Ooh, have you?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I mean, I'm not, like, stalkerish. Like, I guess that is a little stalkerish. I definitely have had some, like, not necessarily searching the streets for him. But just like, oh, what is this man doing? Oh, I need to, I want to be a little part of everything. What's happening here?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I have the, are you on your way? I need you to be here now.
Okay.
You should come.
That's very different.
Oh.
Because okay. I'm thinking about, like, you know.
I mean, I'm just looking at time.
I'm lustful. Oh, okay. I'm lusting over this man. So, what's good? What you doing tonight? You know. If you can't come out, what you doing in? That kind of thing.
Okay.
Which, you know.
More DM slad. And
yeah, I think I'm a little far. I think I'm past that right now in my life, just because I am I don't know if it's that I'm lazy or I haven't.
You got a lot going on.
Yeah, or just I haven't found anyone that it's tickles worth my pickle interest,
yeah.
At that point. You know, I definitely have people that I'm interested in and want to know, you know, what's going on with them. But the, ooh, walking the streets looking for them.
Right.
I ain't there yet.
Well, but you also, as a grown up, just call them and say, hey, what you doing?
I am definitely at the point where I say what I mean. I mean what I say. Mm-hmm. And I am okay with the vulnerability of it all. Mm-hmm. You know, if I want to see you, I want to see you. And I'm going to tell you I want to see you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you might have, I understand we're adults and we have reasons that we're not, you know, like, mm-hmm. I got shit to do tonight. You ain't got to tell me what you know, I'm like, right. I can't, I got shit to do. Okay. Mm-hmm. I dig it. I get it. You know? And I'm also more like, I pay attention to things more. Cause I've always been a, you know, say what you mean what you say kind of gal. But I think I ignored some of the, you know, like, I gotta go and wash my hair. And I'm like, oh, and then gotta wash his hair. What I'm like, no, bitch, you should have just been reading the fact that he's not interested in that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I'm still consistently say what you mean what you say. But I am much better now at, like, reading between the lines.
Mm-hmm.
And I also don't, I read between the lines, but I also check in and be like, hey, this is what I'm feeling. Is it true or am I am I misunderstanding you? I always give people the opportunity to clear up what's unclear.
Hmm.
It's difficult for some people because they're not, you know, because they're so used to
conflict
operating in ambiguity.
Because
that gives you a level of like, well, I never said we was together, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm.
So it's difficult for some people. But again, that's one of those things where I'm like, okay, well, you thrive off of ambiguity. And so I'm not going to be a part of this. So I'm not sure how we got here, but yeah.
Well, we were talking about whether or not you're running through the streets looking for a nigga.
Yeah.
So in part, I think it's because I'm in a relationship. And so we set up all these expectations really early. And so he asked me at one point, you know, when we were figuring it out, you know, how often do you want to see me? And I was like, well, how often do you want to see me? Because it was still early and I wasn't ready to put myself out there. And he was like, I want to see you every day. And I was like, oh, bet. Yeah, I want to see you every day, too. So then it just became anytime I start. And it does happen where I worry that I'm being needy because I've been taught that to need someone or to want someone is equivalent to being needy. And those are not the same thing.
Yeah.
But I would like, I check myself by remembering that conversation where we point blank laid out what our expectations were and what we wanted around spending time together. And we don't see each other every day, but if I want him to spend the night 4 nights in a row, well then, bitch, I say so.
Well, you know, and we had this conversation earlier this week. Those conversations are difficult. Well, they're not difficult. Actually, they're not difficult, but they're uncomfortable when you're not used to having
them. But it's like a muscle.
Yeah, yeah. And you just got to work it more and more. Mm-hmm. But now that I am dating healthily,
mm-hmm.
it's so much easier when you have those conversations up front because then you know. Because I'm one of those people, like, let me know the rules. Mm-hmm. Let me know rules. And I decide
and stick to them.
If this is what I, you know, like, give me all the information I mm-hmm. need to know in right now. And based on that information, I'll decide if I want to play. And if I want to play, I'm good because we got rules.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I get pissed when you break the rules. I was one of them kids like, but I'm following the rules and you're not. You're cheating.
Like my child.
Oh, my God. Oh, and it so gets on my nerves. So, yeah, that was me. But, yeah, I definitely am like, yo, like, when I know the rules, if these are the rules we decide we're mm-hmm. going to play by, then we're going to play by those rules. And that's great. If we need to, you know, come back together and readjust, I'm all for that, too. But these right. are the rules that we've agreed to. But it's so, I actually feel like an adult when I'm having these conversations and figuring out what one's boundaries are. And it's not sexy.
No.
But it's usually necessary to kind of help and make it healthy for all parties involved. Mm-hmm. It keeps everything from, because I'm thinking about the relationships that I've set up, you know, that we've had those conversations about like parameters and that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think should these relationships end, it won't be horrible.
Right.
Because it's like, this is what we agreed to. If we don't want this anymore, let's check in and say it.
Yeah.
You know, unless, you know, y'all fuck up and break some rules, then
right.
die, nigga, die.
But I mean, to me, like that setting of parameters and boundaries, I think that oftentimes when people hear that, especially men, they think of it as preventing them from doing something, like it's restrictive. But what I found is that it actually is freeing.
And I think that a guy that finds it restrictive is not.
He on some bullshit
for.
Anyway.
Yeah. Like if you find us figuring out what is healthy for the two of us, a punishment or something right. like that, then
you should go do this with somebody
like,
else.
Bro. I don't need, this ain't where you need to be because mm-hmm. I need to know what's happening. You mm-hmm. know, like that's how folks get hurt when you start assuming shit and
right.
being all loosey goosey and you know, so mm-hmm. yeah. This is steamy.
It is.
It gets real steamy. And I
if you pay close enough attention.
Let them spread the aroma of my garden.
Yep.
Oh,
my fingers are dripping with perfume.
The one I love may enter and taste
mm-hmm.
the delicious fruits. Like I just I find it, it's just like, yo, y'all talking about juices and fruits and things.
They
like,
are. All the juices and the berries and the oils
yeah.
are going on.
They had peaches and eggplants in the Garden of Eden, huh?
Mm-hmm. Her breasts are grapes.
Yeah. Well, mine ain't grapes. But raisins at some point.
Not quite raisins, but yeah. That's not true at all.
We're going to come back to the steaminess.
Mm-hmm.
So I found it really funny how they pretty much had like an argument about like he came home and was like, knock, knock, let's get it on. She was like, but I took a shower.
I didn't wash my feet.
I didn't wash my feet. I got to get my feet dirty again. I was just like, yo, like is this what happened? And then she said, you know, all right, cool. Open the latch.
Mm-hmm.
Heart stood still.
Mm-hmm.
Rose to the door. Sorry. And
hands.
He wasn't there.
Yeah.
And then, well, yeah, go on. Hands dripping.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just like, yo, like, I found that such, again, some nigga shit from all the way in the back. Like,
well, but remember, I think that she said that was part of her dream, right? Like, she was dreaming that that was happening.
Yeah.
So maybe it's like the fear of losing him that she was dreaming about, or if not making, like, missing that connection that she was dreaming about in that moment. I don't know.
Yeah. But the feeling was so strong mm-hmm. that it caused her to get up and
mm-hmm.
go looking for this Negro
and
through the streets.
Yeah. Yo.
Well, and then she ran into a bunch of niggas that beat her up, which again, I was just like, yo, like this is horrible. And then she ends it by saying, I'm weak with desire, which can be sweet, but I'm like, you just got your ass beat by a group of niggas.
So
like,
you're probably weak from that.
Yeah, you're probably weak from that too. Oh, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it. Okay. So again, we go into the biblical standards of beauty and metaphors of beauty, which I found just like, so some of them are like, oh, this is so great. Some of them are just like, this is kind of weird. His head is the purest gold. His hair is wavy, black as a raven.
Mm-hmm.
You can't tell me that ain't no black.
He got waves. Talk about.
He got waves. he got a bitch seasick. His eyes are a pair of doves bathing in a stream flowing with milk. Okay, so off topic, but kind of on topic. I remember in college, I was taking a metro, taking a bus back to school. You know, that main bus that go up the main street. So I'm like standing in Chinatown waiting to take that bus. And this man comes over and he is like, "Girl, you are beautiful. Your eyes are so clear."
Am I a horse? The fuck?
That was like, I was like, ooh, he's had a long life of doing drugs where to him, what makes me sexy is that I have clear eyes.
It's like, bitch, you ain't got glaucoma.
You ain't got no glaucoma. You ain't got no red eye. I mean, he probably see me now and be like, damn, ho, you been through some shit. But yeah. His arms are branches of gold covered with jewels. His body is ivory, decorated with sapphires. His legs are columns of marble on feet of gold.
Like, uh-huh, like a nice leg, thigh, butt situation.
Again,
yeah,
we here at the Turn On appreciate a solid undercarriage.
Okay, let's talk about this very briefly, y'all. The cast is walking around with the super developed upper bodies, but the little chicken legs.
Please don't.
Don't do it. No. Just don't, squat.
Just as much as you do upper body, let's work on them legs.
Please. You can't hold me if your legs is like toothpicks.
Yeah, like, and I shouldn't be able to fit your jeans.
You know that happened to me once.
And you're not a big chick.
I am not. No, he put on my jeans. And I was even littler then.
And I'm rolling my eyes, not on some, you know, like, maybe you're a man that likes a feminine.
Oh, no, I don't give a shit about that.
Yeah, like, that's.
It didn't bother me that he tried them on. It was the fact that they.
That you can actually fit them. Yeah. Like, I'm, and no offense against a smaller guy, because you know what? I might find a smaller guy.
I mean, I was with this guy. It was just his legs were so skinny. Upper body, fantastic. Legs, lordy.
Yeah.
Right on in my jeans.
No.
Yep.
No, not at all. I'd like a man with a little
you
fluff.
Like a yes,
I like a thicker gentleman. But I do appreciate a good body.
Yeah, I do. Body. That's my
some shoulders,
my constant.
Throw them legs over.
Mm-hmm.
Woo. Okay, yeah, see, look. He stands there majestic, like Mount Lebanon and his choice cedar trees. Mm-hmm. Like, I just, this
call back passage, to the Old Testament when they was building and bringing the cedar from Lebanon.
Yeah,
I was like, oh, I remember my Bible reading.
Oh, y'all want some strength. Okay. And that's this just reminds me, like, she's just describing a solid ass man. And that's what I want. I want you to be mentally solid, but I need you to be physically solid. Because I'm not a little bitch. And so you're going to have to be able to hold up all of this girth. I mean, I'm not here.
You're not. No, but those two things go together, right? They should, ideally. It'd be nice if you could be mentally solid and emotionally solid and physically solid. Mm-hmm. I guess that's the goal, right?
So we have this passage. My darling has gone down to his garden of spices where he will feed his sheep and gather his lilies.
Mm-hmm.
What you think he going? You really think he going down to the Garden of Spices, or was that a metaphor?
Oh yeah, I think it's a metaphor for oral sex.
Okay, yeah, I did too. I was like, oh, put it in your mouth.
Yeah,
said your motherfucking mouth. Okay, wait. That song was like, if you had like a playlist of just when we got to college. Put this song on, complete banger. Mm-hmm. That song was it. Like,
that's on that list.
Back that ass up.
Cash, you know, Money taking over for the 99 and 2000s. That kind on of thing. That list. Yes.
I'm talking to my sister. Mm-hmm. She had never heard this song in her entire way. Life.
She's only a couple years younger than we are.
I think it's an East Coast thing.
We not from the East Coast. Had you never heard that song in Cleveland?
I can't remember.
I mean, not Cleveland. In your town?
I can't remember, but like, she thought it was like she thought it was like a parody. You know how niggas be making up shit on Instagram. She was like, that can't be a real song. I'm like, yo, like, I send her the Apple Music link.
Were we in high school when they came out?
I think the song is old.
I'm saying high school. Yeah, No. I think it came out when we were high school, maybe eighth grade. Listen, we listen to that song all the time. And then Mike Jones took it and turned. You don't know Mike Jones?
I know Mike Jones.
Okay. He took that song and turned it into another song. It's a male version of it. Oh, I'm going to have to play it for you later.
Yeah, okay. We'll add that to the playlist.
So we're very into that song.
Yeah.
It has been a staple in various forms for me for probably 2 decades.
And then the follow-up, which will get me turned in a club, is the good classic by my homie and Pink Cameron, Suck It or Not.
Oh, yeah.
It's so misogynistic.
It's just, you know, he puts that shit out there, though. He's direct.
He's like, you know what?
He is telling you what the rules are.
And I think that's why I appreciate the song, because he's like, this is what's on the table. Mm-hmm. My dick. You gonna suck it or not?
Yeah.
It's so horrible. It's so misogynistic. I was actually catching up on Blackish, and there was this whole episode where the running joke was that Ain't No Fun is a problematic song.
I just watched that one like last week, because I'm also way behind.
Yeah. And I love.
And Bo was in the car. She's like, I can't help it. We have a history with that song.
I love problematic music. I mean, it's a guilty pleasure.
We went on stage at Trap Karaoke and sang that song.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, no problem. And I ain't even going to say it's a problematic. It's just, I love.
Listen, it is what it is.
So, yeah, put it in your mouth.
The best that Warren G has ever sounded is in his entire career.
Yeah.
He does not have a better verse. I'm sure he didn't write it, but he delivered it well.
No, I heard that Warren G was a writer, because I'm listening to, I was catching
but
up
have
on
you,
the local
have
soundtrack.
You listened to a lot of his stuff?
Well, here's the thing. We're not looking for the greatest rapper, the greatest lyricist.
It's a mood.
Yes. And so that, what's the song? The Indo Smoke from the, what's the soundtrack? It was one of them South Central ass movies. Are you high yet?
I don't know that song.
You've never heard Indo Smoke?
I don't think so.
Bitch, we gonna ride out to Indo Smoke later today, because it is definitely one of those like summertime groovy ass. Oh, this is perfect for this. You know, we gonna smoke some weed in your car and ride out to Indo Smoke. The kids will be upstairs doing crafts
and trifling.
Okay, damn, my bad. But yeah, that was definitely a put it in your mouth. Like this whole, I mean, I sound like my pastor when I go back to say, like, we really encourage you to read the entire the entire book. It's not long.
It's not, but we couldn't do the whole thing, so we did have to
just
do excerpts.
Okay, so we close out the hour reading with, you know, him and her going on and on about how I'm yours, you're mine, you desire me, just getting good and nasty. And I love it. Like, it just kind of reminds me of those songs in the 80s where, like, they end with, like, a good If This World Was Mine type joint where they just, you know,
going back and forth.
Going back in bliss. Yeah. And so it was just a delightful kind of ending to it all.
She also, didn't she say, like, if the flowers are out, let's go have sex there? There's also a big up to outdoor situations.
Oh, I love some good outdoor sex. Beach sex, I think we talked about that, is not.
No, I've never done that great. Because it seems like it won't be great.
Yeah. And Dawn, let's slip out and see if grapevines and fruit trees are covered with blossoms. And when we are there, I'll give you my love.
Yep.
Yeah. I have stored for you all kinds of tasty fruits.
Tasty fruits.
I love it.
I start calling it tasty fruits.
Yeah. You know what? We are now giving some good love, giving you some tasty fruits. Mm-hmm. If your thing
is delicious and nutritious. Nasty. Something that's sweet and juicy.
Yeah, I was so like.
Like a perfectly ripe nectarine. Like right at the beginning of June. When they're,
I was told, your pussy's see like an orange. It's like just real, just squeezy and juicy. I was just like,
okay.
All right, I'll take that. I will take that. So, yeah, an orange. Mm. A good around the way filet orange.
I like it.
And I want them ones with a thick skin. Like, you know.
Nah, the Jones, that's real easy to.
Because, again, this orange, if you got the right hand, hey, you can open it quickly. So, this takes me to my bigger question about, like, here we have this book of the Bible that is clearly about sex and a romantic sex. Not that bullshit, this is the love the Lord has for the church. Girl, the Lord ain't churching nobody with some juicy fruit.
Well, yeah, I was reading that like a lot, that is how folks have traditionally tried to dissect this book, is to say that it's symbolic of the Lord, yeah, like the Lord's love for his followers and the spirit.
Yeah,
but in more modern times, folks have been like, that's some bullshit.
But even if it's symbolic, like, you used
sexual language, sex, yes,
to show symbolism, like, right. This is like, it's kind of like with the whole shepherd and stuff. Like, yeah, y'all use shepherd and sheep because niggas was doing shepherd and sheep shit. Yeah. Like, we use this. I mean, I think, again, I feel like the whole idea that this is a story symbolic of the Lord's love for the church, yeah, I feel like that's bullshit. But even if we were to continue with that argument, like,
it's still that they chose to use sexual metaphors in order to do that. Exactly. Because people have sex.
Exactly.
If they, you know, if they are not asexual, then they are probably having sex in some way. And hell, asexuals still have self-sex, so it's all sex.
Sex is happening.
Exactly.
Even back in the Bible times. Mm-hmm. Somebody's probably cringing every time I say
the Bible times. some would say that we are always in the Bible times.
You know what? You're right. Look at God. Okay, so when you were growing up, what were your thoughts about, like, because I feel like growing up, you have ideas and thoughts about one thing. Mm. The thing that makes you more of an adult is when you kind of figure out how to merge those.
Yeah, how those things can intersect.
Yeah, how those things intersect. So what were your thoughts about sex and religion growing up?
I don't think I had any. I mean, I didn't grow up in like a super churchy household. I've written about this a bit. Like, in my home, like, my father was very, you need to know about all religions. So, like, when Jehovah's Witnesses knocked on the door, my daddy invited them in and we had Bible study. I've been to Kingdom Hall. I've been to a temple. Like, I've been to a lot of different places because my dad was very, like, God is everywhere. Let's go get some. You know what I mean? Kind of a situation. But I think because he was loosey-goosey on that, and I didn't start going to church regularly until I was in high school, and that was of my own volition. Like, I didn't even go with my family. There was no, like, grandmother telling me that, you know, touching myself was not of God and it was dirty. There was no, don't have sex until you know, that's something that you say for your husband. I literally didn't get any of that from the people around me. Mm-hmm. So I think that the most that I would have known about it is just from, like, media.
Yeah.
In terms of what that looks like. And it never, I can't say that it ever, not in any direct way, informed me. Like, I never, ever had the idea that I was going to wait until I was married to have sex.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. Like, what were your thoughts around, like, your virginity? Was it, like, something sacred or,
it was, but it wasn't sacred in terms of religion. It was, so I was 18 when I lost my virginity. And for me, it was more of this, I am this nerdy ass idealist and this is the way that it has to go. So it was prom weekend. It was with my boyfriend who was trash. It was, I rented a hotel room and lied and told my daddy that all my friends were staying at this hotel. It had to be like the whole, you know, what I thought a movie would look like in terms of losing my virginity. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, it was terrible. But I had this whole plan in my head. And so it was more about me feeling like I was emotionally ready and having hit this specific number, I felt like 18 was grown enough and I wasn't doing something that I wasn't emotionally ready for in my mind. I was very logical about it. So I think that no matter who I had been with at that point, because I had decided that that was the way that I should lose my virginity, that was what it was going to be. So it was never this whole thing about, oh, God is going to, you know, feel a way about me doing this at this age or in this stage. That never really played into it for me. What about you?
So I grew up with a very religious, I mean, not like crazy religious, but definitely went to church every Sunday kind of grandmother. Mm-hmm. It's hard to say I grew up in the church because now I have a partner who grew up in the church. I'm like, oh,
that's a different life. Yeah, yeah, that's that. You at church every Wednesday, you at church every Tuesday, you at church all day Sunday for every service life.
I'm like, oh, I ain't grew up in the church like that. So I grew up in the church light, L-I-T-E, like a crystal light. So I definitely, I mean, when I lost my virginity, maybe this was the church light speaking to me, but I didn't think much about like, oh, the Lord's going to kill me or something like that. I mean, like I'm going to go to hell because of that. Because I also grew up in a home where we were surrounded by LGBTQ people. Mm-hmm. And so the religion that I got as a child was very much, you know, love inclusive, all people. Yeah, that kind of religion and not the fire and brimstone.
Yeah.
So, yes, on one hand, I was like, ugh. I don't think God chilling would, you know, would be happy with me on this. I also was on the like, but God love everybody. I ain't kill nobody. We good, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think I was a little less like freaked out about losing my virginity because again, y'all heard the story, marching band,
waterbed.
But as I get older, I think about how I want to teach my son about sex and how this jives with religion, because I feel like now I am a lot more spiritual and religious than, I mean, I hate saying religious because that connotes like, you know, Jerry Falwell, but I'm a lot more religious now than I was growing up or even as a kid. I mean, you know, like as a young adult or even as a kid. And I think I want my child to look at sex the way you did. Like, am I ready for it? Is this something that I want to do? I mean, I don't think he, you know, needs to. I think you made critiquing your shit. But I think, you know, you grew up a lot faster than you should have. Mm. And so you made this decision from a, you know, 30-year-old, 18-year-old.
I did.
You know. Frame of
we
mind.
Had condoms, like, with spermicide, we had separate minoxidil, whatever that stuff. I was so serious. I was like, I got college to go to, you ain't finna knock me up. I had a whole situation together.
Yeah, but you know, so I don't need you to, because your situation was a you don't know what you don't even know kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You understand what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like you swore you knew it all, but she was like, oh, poor baby, you don't know shit, you know. So I don't want my kid to necessarily be there, but I also want him to understand that, like,
the implications of
it's
joining
not like
with someone
you're, you know, about to make some soul ties with a motherfucker or something like that. It's just, this needs to be, you need to feel like you're ready for sex and the consequences that come from it. There's a lot more than just, am I going to get her pregnant or am I going to get a cheesy dick, you know? But yeah, like, and then also as I become a lot more liberal in my sex, like, cause I do it all, y'all. I do a whole lot. I mean, I don't think I touched on, I mean, I think y'all kind of get that from listening to me, but I have fun.
You do. And it's interesting. I was just thinking about it. I also think we haven't really talked about the full extent of what partners look like. I think so far it probably sounds like you only have sex with men, and that's not true.
That's not true. I like to swim in all ponds. We'll say that. And so I think even as I get more, as I deepen my spirituality, I also like get more into my sexual freeness. I don't think that there's necessarily a need to jive. I mean, I, you know, like I've you want to be like, does this fit in with these other held beliefs? Mm-hmm. And I think right now I'm at a point where I don't think it necessarily needs to fit in. I just like reading the Song of Solomon. It is like, look, this is a piece of this couple's life, meaning sex is a part of it.
Yeah.
And we only got a slice of it. Because there might have been more juicy fruits. There might have been pears, pineapples, blueberries.
Watermelons.
All types of juicy fruits, you know. But, yeah. And I'm debating if I want to share this because it might be sharing too much about someone else. So I'm going to hold off. Just, okay. I mean, I don't mind sharing my shit, but yeah, I don't want to share other
No, you don't
want
to tell other people's stories.
But, yeah, like, as I grow and do more in my sexual exploration, like, I don't have a feel of like, ooh, God's gonna get me, you know.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever felt that before, but that's not the God I know.
Yeah, the God I know is a God that loves all and knows that we all fuck up. And it was interesting because at church a few weeks back, the pastor did a sermon on the environment, climate change.
Oh, yeah.
It was such a good sermon.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things he said, he was like, what makes a sin is what is the intent, is like what's behind it. So like being adulterous is a sin because you're treating this person as if they're for you and you only. You're treating this person as if they exist to be your sexual object. And you're not thinking about the fact that this person has a wife and kids and, you know, or this, you know, like that there's more than you're treating this person as you were here for the sake of giving me pleasure. And I get that, you know, I mean, he didn't go as far as to say like, y'all can, you know, go out and fuck all willy nilly. But I get that, you know, because I feel like sex is more than just. I mean, it's intimate. It's an intimate act, but it's also, and I don't want to like cheapen it. I'm thinking this through as I talk to y'all. So I might feel, like I'm going all over the place because I am, but we'll get there. So just stay on this train with me. So I feel like sex is pleasure between two people that's shared.
Or more.
Especially for me. Sex is between people that share, like that's a shared pleasure. Mm-hmm. Like I'm giving you pleasure. You're giving me pleasure. We're sharing this pleasure. Mm-hmm. I don't want to go as far. I mean, I do think that sex is intimate, but it's not like the ultimate intimate act.
Mm-hmm. Which we talked about a bit.
I feel like intimacy is built over time. Yeah. Also. So, you know, I don't want to. Yeah, I look at my sexual experiences as spiritual also. Mm. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's nasty, but sometimes it's like, it's like.
In that it takes you out of yourself, but also puts you in yourself at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
you're such a writer.
Where you're so grounded in what you're doing in that moment, but also connected to everything else that's going on. It's like a beautiful,
beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go back a little bit because when you were talking about what Pastor said about like the intent is what makes it sin, I find that an interesting reading because like as somebody who does social justice and racial justice work, you know, we talk about how intent is not what's important, it's the impact. So to take this to, I'll take it to a non-sexual place and into a sexual place. It's when a white person says, well, I didn't mean to, you know, make you feel like I was a racist or whatever. You know, I didn't mean to call you a nigger. I didn't mean that you're a nigger. Well, nigga, your intent might not have been racist, but your impact was, you know what I mean? You claim that you didn't intend to hurt me. But you did, to take it to a sexual place where these men typically say that they didn't intend to sexually abuse or harass or otherwise, you know, impugn somebody else. And they say that that wasn't their intent. But the impact was that it was traumatic for that person. And so what we speak to is the way that people are affected by the things that we do in the world. So like even with my daughter, she'll say, mama, you know, that hurt. You when you said that, that hurt me. I don't say, oh, I didn't mean to hurt you. I say, I'm so sorry that I hurt you. It's not about what I meant to do. It's about how she felt. Yeah. I just wanted to speak to that language that really like made my ears perk up a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's a really good way to think about it. And that's something I got to think about.
It works really well to think about that framework when you're apologizing.
Yeah. And I think that's also great framework for men to think about. Well, for people to think about when they go into sexual experiences mm-hmm. with people, because yes, the intent might not be to harm, but if you think this through, okay. So this reminds me of a situation I had with a partner. We were conversing, had plans, that kind of thing. And it ended up where he suggested something that I was like, yo, whoa, what the fuck? You know? And it wasn't anything like sexual or crazy. It was just like a situation.
He was trying.
Yeah. I was like, you're trying to play me. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that he necessarily was. And so I don't think the intent of like, you know, trying to play Erica, pull some crazy. I don't even think he was trying to pull some crazy shit. It was just like, dude, had you thought this through about how I might have felt? And I mean, this is still kind of new, so I don't think he quite gets everything about me. Mm-hmm. And this might have been a situation someone else was okay with. But knowing me, knowing how I roll, I was like, no, this ain't a situation I'm trying to be in. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I don't think the intent for harm or anything crazy to happen was there. But it's just kind of like, had you thought about this a little bit more? Mm-hmm. You wouldn't have suggested it.
Right.
You know, so yeah, I find that that's a really good way of thinking about, you know, when you're going into a situation, you might be okay with it, but just do a little deeper thinking about, you know, the person you're with, their headspace and what they might want. You didn't tell me, or maybe I missed it. What are your thoughts about, what are you going to teach your child about sex and
I think I'm gonna teach her, you know, with regards to religion and sex, it's the same thing as religion and everything, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we are children of God. There is nothing that God has created you to do that is simple, you know what I mean? Like, there's mm-hmm. nothing that, you know, I think I've heard people frame all types of things as being sin, using, you know, shit, it's people, I'm sure, that think that this show is sinful. Mm-hmm. I think it's more about just making sure that she's pleasing to God and that she is kind to other people and that she, you know what I mean? Like, to me, that is more of what that is. I'm not a hardliner. Leviticus said, don't pierce your ears and don't eat shellfish.
Well, and also, you know, this, makes me think just the bigger picture about, like, it is when I, so I did the read the Bible in a year mm-hmm. app thing. Well, I didn't read
I
it.
Have I three times gone through and I finished.
And it's like September, Heathen. November.
It always gets October. To like, yes, yeah. uh-huh. the end of the year, and then things get hectic and then I fall off.
Yeah.
So I start over.
But, you know,
I know the Old Testament real well.
It is very difficult for me to get through the Old Testament.
Yeah.
It is very difficult.
It's tough.
Actually, our church was supposed to have a Bible study. It didn't really go in as deep as I wanted it to. But it's very difficult for me to digest the Old Testament,
mm-hmm.
primarily because people still use that as a foundation for certain things.
Right. Even though the New Testament is a whole new animal.
And so it's a very tough piece of work mm-hmm. to swallow. And then you combine
Not to mention numbers and... Ugh.
And then you combine that with, you know, sexist and yada, mm-hmm. yada, yada. I'm like, yo, like, yeah. we was wilding in the Old Testament. So,
yeah, I mean, giving up our daughters to be raped because it was preferable to that than someone having sex, like gay sex, like. All of these things. And it's so hard. Remember, we were struggling trying to find really good womanist interpretations of the Bible. And there just aren't a lot of, like, there's really no devotionals that really do that.
Yeah, like, I need a good, like, womanist devotional.
Because not just feminist, because that white lens. But, you know, like, a feminist reading of this would likely gloss over the I am dark and beautiful.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Or no, they would use the I am dark yet beautiful.
Right. And use that to justify their fairness. why it's beautiful. Yeah. And then a lot of it for me is about shoring up the way that she feels about herself and her body.
Yeah.
I think that will inform, because I guess it has informed a lot of the way that I've related to people, having that firm foundation and who she is. And, you know, like we talk about masturbation, about how self-pleasure is not just okay, but it is good, and have her enter into any type of relationships that she would have in a sexual nature with other people with that grounding of who she is and what's pleasurable to her, mm-hmm. will be really important. And the third part is consent, which I have been working with her on since forever. I mean,
and it's consent with children is just so, it's so simple yet difficult, because the way that kids play is all like, I'm like a broken record with keep your hands to yourself, mm-hmm. keep your hands to yourself, keep your hands to yourself. And bigger than the like fighting thing, it's just like, this is your body. People aren't allowed to touch it mm-hmm. unless you give them permission.
Right. And I mean, I think to me, the simple part of it is when you boil it down to the autonomy of it. So what I tell her, like when we were going to see a dermatologist and she had to, you know, she was in a gown and they wanted to look at the eczema that was on her bottom. And I said, hey, you get to say whether or not she can look at you. So is it okay if she looks and touches you? And she said yes. And taking every opportunity to remind her that she gets to decide who touches her body. Mm-hmm. So, you know, when they're fighting or when they're, you know, that's your body, that's their body. You get to decide, but let's not touch each other in ways that aren't gentle. When it's, you know, with her and her friends all over each other, like reminding them of that. When it comes down to, I'm forgetting another example of when I always bring in the autonomy part of it. It'll come back to me. But I think that there are lots of moments, because as you said, kids are always in each other's faces, to remind them that they get to make those choices from a super early age, mm-hmm. so that hopefully they don't get boxed into those places that a lot of us, as you know, older women have, where we found ourselves not really feeling like we had the agency to tell somebody to get off of us.
Yeah.
Because we weren't taught, hugs, that was the thing. I don't make her hug people. Mm-hmm. You know, if someone wants to hug her, I ask her if she wants to. I give her the choice. And sometimes she says no. Mm-hmm. And she ain't got to. I'm never forcing my kid to hug anybody. And it's not just not hugging men. It's not hugging anybody if mm-hmm. she doesn't want to. That's her body. She don't have to have somebody all up in her area like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, giving her from the very beginning, letting her know that she can use her voice to say no, mm-hmm. From the consent standpoint, has been super important. And I think those are the three things that rock for me in terms of preparing her for that later.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. Actually, we went to a new doctor yesterday and I thought it was really dope. Older Black woman. And she, you know, my son's hitting puberty age, so she had to check his parts.
Oh, yikes.
You know, she was like, I'm just looking to see what is he approaching puberty, because they look different. I did not know that. And so she looks at me and she's like, Mom, can I check him?
Good.
And I said, yes. And then she looks at him and she's like, no one is allowed to touch you unless you say you can and your mom says you can. Mm-hmm. And she said, it's fine. Can I look? And mm-hmm. he was like, yeah. And I just thought, I mean, it wasn't like a huge like thing. It was just,
it's just part worked into what you do.
And I think that's really dope, because I don't think that every parent says that to their kids. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think it's like something.
I don't think people think about it always. Yeah, so folks are not super intentional about the way that we raise our kids.
Yeah, you just do. And so I thought it was great that she said that in front of both of us. And then it was also like it's also a check to parents that don't do that. Like, if you don't ever hear it, you heard it
here, right here.
You know, so I thought that was really dope.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you have any more to add to this conversation?
No, just that I'm really glad that we did this. I thought it was a great idea. Hats off to you.
Thank you.
You know, we talked about it a few episodes ago about how this show will not always be what you think it's going to be. Mm-hmm. And that our whole thing of sex and really holds. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, just sex and talking about a body part or sex and talking about anal. It's sex and religion. It's sex and patriarchy. It's sex and race. And that this is a great episode for highlighting that. So, great. Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you for joining us for this episode of The Turn On. And this is Erica and Caria, two hoes making it biblically clap.
This episode was produced by us, Kenria and Erica, and edited by Ballistic. The theme song is from Brazy. We want to hear from y'all. Send your book recommendations and all your burning sex and related questions that you want us to answer to theturnonpodcast@gmail.com. And please subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast app. Follow us on Twitter at @TheTurnOnPod and Instagram at @TheTurnOnPodcast. And find links to books, transcripts, guest info, and other fun stuff at theturnonpodcast.com. And remember, we're now part of the Frolic Podcast Network, and you can find more shows that you'll love at frolic.media/podcast. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you soon. Peace.